There's a time and a place for a fillet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World with Haif Abdul Ahad. A stranger in your own city travels in the Middle East long war. It is halfway between Baghdad and Mosul is a city called Ramadi. We heard about it much in the Sunni Awakening of 2007. Well, it's back, except one witticism that we learn in the telling of this story is that I believe when the women want to, the Sunni women want to make certain that you're going to have a bad time, they say something like, "May you have many sheikhs in your clan or your tribe." What does that mean, Haith? Why do they say that?
It's not only the Sunnis, but it's in every tribal society in Iraq. If women want to curse a woman from another tribe, they say, "May Allah increase the tribal elders in your society." Because the more sheikhs, the more tribal elders you have in a tribe, the more infighting you have, and every one of them will try to use outside powers to increase their influence. And this is exactly what's happened at Ramadi, which is to the west. Yeah, Baghdad is here, Mosul is there, Ramadi is to the west. And different Sunni politicians, tribal elders, forces some use the power of Maliki to fight others. Some kind of use the power of the jihadis, align themselves with the Americans. And this internal infighting between the Sunnis, I mean, sometimes I call what's been happening in Iraq in the past 20 years, I mean, until ISIS, is the tragedy of the Sunnis. Because, you know, the Sunnis in Iraq never saw themselves as a monolithic, unified force. They are people of different cities, a mercantile Mosul, a tribal Ramadi, rural Diyala. The Americans came and they perceived the Sunnis as a one sect and pushed them into a corner, targeted them with lots of sanctions, and then they told them, go and come back with a political project. Of course they couldn't. And this infighting, this Sunnis, inability to create a coherent political plan has led to all these disasters along the last, 15 years in Iraq.
I believe you are in Ramadi when fighting breaks out. There was a chaotic scene, gunfire, people fighting during the day, sleeping at night, no one secure. It very much felt like you had descended into another country, a country where no one was safe whatsoever. Was that the experience that you remember?
I remember very well this day when we're standing at this kind of market, next to a market, and people kind of collecting their stuff, trying to put their families in the back of pickup trucks, fleeing the city. The government forces are besieged in the government house, the militias everywhere. And we saw a car with a couple of gunmen inside. And I asked my friend, who's local from Ramadi, who are those people? And as the group of neighbors each gave a name to a different faction, and I counted, and there were 12, 14 different factions fighting inside the Ramadi. And of course, Islamic State, ISIS, was one versus, Iraqi government, intelligence service, militias, special forces. It was chaos. You never knew who was fighting whom.
And the violence is commonplace and continuing and is not resolved until the rise or the presence of ISIS, which in your telling, I understand, is much more organically part of this chaos. ISIS it's a Sunni organization, but it represents a order in the chaos. And Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, a former member of the Air Force, I believe, a security officer, was representing a refuge for all of the young men who had been resisting Shia, resisting the Americans, resisting the violence, really a criminal behavior. But Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi gave them what, a mission? How is he first regarded before the conquest of Mosul? What was the opinion?
Look, I mean, ISIS, after the defeat of al-Qaeda, I mean, the jihadis got a really bad reputation amongst the Sunnis of Iraq themselves. And of course, you know, no one could believe that the jihadis could resurrect themselves and come back. But again, as you said, Maliki's sectarian policies, the criminal behavior of the Iraqi security forces, the chaos amongst the Sunnis allowed the jihadis to regroup and come back. They did not advertise themselves first as Islamic State or Al-Qaeda, you know, 2.0, but kind of they tried to masquerade themselves in different names. When they took over, and again, they were disciplined, they had forces. Many of the young kids, you know, a lot joined them. I mean, of course, many fought against them. We have to remember it's the Sunnis who fought against ISIS as much as the Shia and everyone else. But also they found a crack in the society in Iraq, and they infiltrated that crack until they established themselves as a military power. And then they went basically killing Sunnis, Shia, Kurds, and Christians, and everyone who did not agree with their mad ideology.
It's 2014. Have the Iranians dispatched advisors at this point, or is that later? Is that 2015, 2016? I don't know when they first showed up.
I mean, one can argue the Iranians showed up the day after the Americans entered Baghdad.
Okay, okay, that's a good date.
You know, because I spoke with an Iraqi guy who was working with the Iranian intelligence service, and he told me when the British occupied Basra, they came in a convoy of, you know, jeeps, pickup trucks. They didn't know if they were going to fight the British or what's the deal. Right. And of course, the British not only did not fight the Americans, but they actually used men who were trained in Iran to become the backbone of the new Iraqi security forces. Right. From an Iranian... Sorry.
Let's go on to the Battle of Mosul. And because the Iranians are a predicate for that. A Stranger in Your Own City is the book. Harith Abdulahad is the author. I'm John Mann.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.